Ah, trendsetters, this is episode 707 of the Trendsmove podcast. My name is Tim Egg, and if you have a question for the show, do not hesitate to jump on through to the website, trainsmooth.com, or forget that and just jump onto your email machine, tim@trainsmooth.com, and start punching away. Training, racing, nutrition, it's all good. I love all your questions. Now, about somewhere around that 3 weeks ago mark, I was in the shower and I noticed I've got this lump down low, just down low, almost at the twig and berry area, and I thought, bloody hell, God's sake, that just looks like a hernia to me. And you push it in and it goes and it slowly comes back out, and I think, bloody hell. Anyway, for about 4 or 5 days I felt horrible, and I couldn't go to the doctors or anything at that time because life had just squeezed the living crap out of me. And so I was fighting for every spare minute I could get that week. And so I felt horrible, but whether that had something to do with it or not, I'm not sure. And then I had a week where I felt normal. There's been no pain, no discomfort with it. It was just there, and I thought, all right, I'll book into my doctor. And there's a bit of a list, unless it's urgent. You hop on a bit of a waiting list. So I'll put a pin in to him. And the last, you know, last 5 days or so, I started getting this discomfort into the pain discomfort. So on, you know, that pain scale of 0 to 10, 10 being bloody ridiculous, I'm going to chop my bloody, you know, limbs off because I can't stand it, versus 0 being no pain. It was always around that 2 area. And so not that bad at all. And so I go to the quack, and he has a feel around, and because of the position of it, it's, you know, you lose all dignity. And so he's having a little poke around and making me feel violated. And then so I've got to go for scans and all that. And so I'm asking him all these questions, and I've got, you know, a decent race in February. I've got the big race in June. Can I get through, you know, the next 35 weeks or thereabouts with this here? I can handle the current level of pain and discomfort. I can handle that. I can handle it if it increases a little bit more. But I don't want to stop training because I've got these goals. And, the moment I cross the finishing line, chop me up if you want, put me on the operating table then, because he said it, I need operating, and I've got to go for scans just to double check a few different things. But and so I'm, and he said, well, it depends, I can't give you an answer, you know. He says, one moment you could be pedaling and then the very next moment you're not doing another pedal stroke. And I think, well, that's confidence for me. It's bloody great news, eh? And so he was saying, you know, I can risk it, because he's, oh, you know, I go, how long, if I get operated on, how long is it going to take before I can start training again? Oh, it's going to take about 4 weeks before you can start moving. And I'm thinking, right, well, there's 4 weeks of no training, and then I've probably got another 4 weeks on top of that of just building slowly back up, and then I've probably got another 4 weeks on top of that to get kind of back to where I'm at the moment. Like, it's taken me 6 months to get this level of fitness, and I'm still nowhere near Ironman fitness. And so I'm doing the math in my head, and I say, well, what happened if I just risk it? And, you know, we'll worry about this after Ironman. And he goes, oh, you know, you could be just pedaling, and then if it fully pops out, you may not be taking another pedal stroke. And which then got me thinking, I don't know if you've I'm a huge Sopranos fan. I think that's the greatest TV series ever created. And I just remember this scene of Tony Soprano fishing with Bobby Buccellari on the river, and Tony says, no risk, no reward. And that's what I thought, instantly went through my head. I thought, well, bloody hell, no risk, no reward. I can't afford to take that sort of time off and still. And the quack said, you know, you get operated on, you recover in time. You know, that should give you about 12 weeks leading into it. I'm thinking, yeah, but it's going to take me 12 weeks just to get to the stage I'm at. So I'm going to risk it. He also said that I may not get in as well to the operating table before that, but it depends on a few different things. But I said I'm going to risk it. So I feel like I'm on borrowed time, maybe. Training's going well in everything, in particular my run, surprisingly. But everything's going well. I'm getting, you know, I've got to let, if I'm not moving around or anything, I obviously have to change things in my training to nurse this bad boy. I'm not lifting weights anymore. My strength training's had to really change. Like before, I would train my gym work was at least twice a week, quite often 3 days a week, and there were generally 40 to 50 minute sessions each. So so now we're doing a lot of body weight work instead. So instead of me getting on the squat racks and smashing out, you know, tons of squats, I call the squat rack my wattage cottage. So instead of me on the wattage cottage, I now do 500 freestand squats, which sounds like a lot. It's not that physically taxing, but bloody you, a treadmill feels like it's a lot more enjoyable than bloody doing 500 free squats. Time comes still, but that's what I'm doing. So I've obviously got to change a few different things in my training to nurse it, and so it doesn't get worse. And with the idea that everything I'm doing could come to a complete stop at any point, unfortunately for me. But yeah, as Tony said, no risk, no reward. Anyway, that's enough of me carrying on. Today's question comes from Craig, and I coach Craig, which makes him super awesome. Craig sent this question through to tim@trainsmove.com, and you could do the same. Training, racing, nutrition. I love all your questions. He writes, currently training for an Ironman and have noticed the increase in volume at the weekends. The increase in sports fuels, gels required to help support the training. During a recent long bike ride, I felt the dreaded bonk for the first time, and I have a friend who is studying to be a nutritionist, and she was godsmacked when she has seen the amount of gels and bars I take for a 6-hour bike ride. She mentioned she had read some studies finding endurance athletes are at high risk of type 2 diabetes with insulin spikes. From my limited understanding, we burn fat at a lower intensity and carbs at a higher intensity. You have mentioned previously that you can train your body to adapt to burning fats as fat instead of carbs. Not quite, but we'll get there in a sec. Can you go into a bit and let me know what you reckon there is another option for endurance athletes, or if gels are necessary to help us achieve our goals? So a few things here. There's a lot to actually unpack within here, but I remember that I personally, I'm a huge fan of bonking. Big fan, because that's when we have that little come to Jesus meetings, and you know, we really know we're alive when we're miles and hours away from anywhere and we've bloody hit that wall and we're thinking, God's sake, why was I even born today? It's you have no idea how to get home, you just want to die, you just want to bloody, you know. Oh, I remember this one time I had a tremendous bonk, and fortunately for myself, as much as I just said I love a good bonk, I haven't had one for years, thank goodness. But I remember this one time I had just A1 beautiful bonk. I did this hard day of training. Now, this is going back probably a decade ago. And I had this hard day of training, or days leading into it was hard day of training. And I didn't think, you know, the next day, I forget what my session was supposed to be. But anyway, I get home from a hard ride and stuff, and my wife suggested we go down to Hobart for the day, for the night. She goes, why don't we go down to Hobart now? We'll, you know, stay the night. You can get up, you can ride home, and the kids and I will go to the markets and crap like that, and we'll head home when we want. And so you never, you know, a gift horse, you know, you think, geez, I'm invited to do a long ride. Hell yeah. And so I jumped at the occasion. Now, my legs were already dead at the time, and I thought, nah, it should be fine. Anyway, the next morning I get up early and I take off, and it was just a headwind all the way. It was a bloody nasty headwind, and from Hobart to Launceston is 200 kilometers on the dot, and there is no turning here. It's 200 kilometer headwind, and it was a bloody nasty headwind, and I get like 60 k's into this bloody ride, and I'm thinking, I have no idea how the hell am I going to make it 10 k's from here. Like, I know there's a service station up the road here in about 10 k's, 5 k's or whatever. I don't know how I'm going to make it. So I finally arrive to this bloody service station. I pull in. I must order about 2,000 calories worth of food just to... I was eating, I think I had a bacon and egg McMuffin, I had a couple of Mars bars, I had a can of Coke, I just, anything that looked sideways at me. I actually felt a little bit better from that. And then that got me to the next, you know, the next, I got me to Ross, okay, a town like halfway between. And I just remember thinking, this was, my average speed went, you know, way down. I didn't have a power meter in those days, which would be cool to look at these days, but it was just brutal, just this nasty headwind the whole way home. I'm a fan of it because I just believe it builds strong mental toughness, and hopefully, you know, that crap clicks in on race day when you're 32 k's into that marathon and you still got 10 to go, and you're feeling every single footstep that you're taking, and you look around and every person around you starting to break down around you, and it's the quiet part of the courses where there aren't any people clapping their hands and going, come on, you can do it. You're not hearing any of that. So I love it. But to go back to start answering some of these questions, I'm not 100% believing your I haven't seen too many studies. I've seen studies that indicate that once endurance athletes stop, and if we don't curve our diet, we get type 2 diabetes within the next 2 or 3 years. I forget what it was. Endurance athletes are some of the highest carb intakers on the world, but yet our rate of type 2 diabetes is some of the lowest. There is that. I will say one thing I recommend every single person gets, every single person, and I've started giving these things away as Christmas and birthday presents to family and friends, is a glucose monitor. They're not that expensive. You take your blood glucose fasted, if you know, wake up, get your blood glucose tested. That will tell you a huge sign. If it's over 5.5 millimoles, it becomes a red flag that you start needing to change things in your diet. If it's over 6 millimoles, that becomes a major red flag. I'm pretty sure with this, because I had a situation similar to this with an athlete I coach a little while back, where if it's 2 days, if you test yourself twice and it's both over 6 millimoles, your chances are you've got type 2 diabetes. So you know, a glucose monitor, just a general, you know, prick your fingers, put the little strip against your finger, gives you the results in 10 seconds. They're not that expensive. I think every family should have one of those things, I test my blood glucose levels every single morning, and I'm not on a high, you know, if you look at my diet, it's generally a high carbohydrate diet in general, and my morning glucose readings are generally around that 4.5 millimoles, so it's a nice little amount. So there is that. The higher the training volume a person does, and this is very, very broad strokes here, the higher the training load the athlete will do, the less worrying that person needs to be when it comes to carbs intake. The less, because they are getting a good amount of training in, volume. The less training that person does, the more important that diet needs to be. Now, I know this is, I'm going to contradict myself here, but obviously with higher volume athletes, diet is going to be important because that's going to help with recovery. But that's a different subject. That's a different topic. I'm going to put that to the side here. So you have to keep that in mind. So an athlete training 6 hours a week versus an athlete training 20 hours a week, the guy that's doing 6 hours a week needs to keep that in mind. That his carbohydrate level shouldn't be that high compared to that 20. I'm saying that wrong. I know what I mean, but I'm saying it wrong. I'll see if I can rechange that as I'm running along here. So to go back, as we do more training volume, we do get more fat adapted. And we always are burning carbs and we're always burning fats, especially in the low intensities. Now, I very recently did a FatMax test, and it was my first time I've ever done one. And this was last week. And the results were great, better than I was expecting. And you look at, you know, I've got my LT1, LT2 with lactate, and for those who playing at home who not quite sure what LT1 is and LT2, think of LT1 is the top end of zone 2, and your LT1 is your top end of zone 2, and LT2, let's call that your FTP, for instance, for nice simple terms. Well, doing the FatMax and then comparing it to all that, now I've got VT1 and VT2, and I can see where my FatMax is. And the most I'm always burning carbs and I'm always burning fat for the most part until I get to an extremely high amount. Now, I got these tests done for the bike and I got these tests done for the run, and the information I got on what power, what speeds, am I burning fat and am I burning carbohydrates? It's bloody pretty good information. I never maxed out on the run. I tapped out before that because my legs couldn't. My legs gave up before. So I was surprised at how much better my fat oxidation is for running than it was for cycling. I thought it would be completely the other way around. But having said that, I've got a little bit of work to do. But the most fat-adapted athletes, the best athletes that are good at fat oxidation, are still going to be consuming anywhere between 60 grams and 90 grams of carbohydrates per hour. Now, we've got this new thing, and it's a bragging right these days. And I did buy into it for a very short time, where we can now consume 120 grams per hour of carbohydrates. A few recent studies have come out and said we're not oxidating that. When once it goes over 90 grams, we're not really oxidating that extra lot of carbs. So going over 90, you might be tolerating 120 grams of carbs, but it's not really. Once you go over 90 grams of carbs, you're not really oxidating that. So. And then, you know, there's benefits. The benefits come if you're a cyclist doing stage races, doing the Tour de France, and you've got to back it up. Because, you know, that extra carb's got to go somewhere. It's for a one-day race, it's just more or less just sitting in your gut doing bugger all. Even the most fat-adapted athletes are going 60 to 90 grams of carb, depending on the size of the athlete, depending on the amount of power that athlete is producing will depend greatly on that. But 60 to 90 grams an hour for the entire race, it's a lot. Your friend would know, you know, you pour 90 grams of sugar on a scale, you start bloody, you know, you think, crikey, am I going to put that into my system every hour? Gee whiz. But it's, you know, we, that in the intensity we're racing at Ironman, we need to be putting carbohydrates in. And in training, we can have far less in training, but by a long shot, but then we've got to get ourselves used to race day nutrition by a long shot, so it is a counterbalance. Personally, I like the concept of 100 hours of training at race day nutrition leading into a race. So in that full, you know, build, spending about 100 hours practicing under load, practicing that race day nutrition. I like that because it's a nice, easy round number. 100 hours of it, which sounds like a lot, but it's not really a lot. And especially if you're looking at it over like a 40-week period, and you could be satisfied that what you're doing is most likely going to work well on race day. And there is also a few little things when it comes to carb intake during races. If it's hot, you might need a little bit less because unless you've really practiced with it. It's one of those things. If you look at heat prep, one of the main keys for that is being able to consume race day nutrition per hour with a higher body temperature. But anyway, I'm veering off. I'm sure I've missed a bit there, I think. What have I mentioned? I'm just half rereading this. Yeah. If you guys have any other questions, jump on through to the website, trainsmooth.com. Until next episode, hooroo.